How do we become a sustainable world? As the stakes for our survival continues to rise, so does our global consciousness. We are in the midst of a great spiritual awakening and are laying the foundations for a happy, peaceful, just, and sustainable world. With clear vision, determination, and a positive attitude, we are making sustainability happen. The transformation is already underway. You are listening to Sustainable Futures. Welcome to Sustainable Futures. On today's show, we're going to have one interview. It's an interview with Susan Witt of the E.F. Schumacher Society. And she's full of great stories about the development of a local currency in Massachusetts.
Cool. That sounds great.
So without further introduction, here it is. I hope you enjoy it. This is Ryan Fletcher of Sustainable Futures speaking with Susan Witt, one of the founders of the E.F. Schumacher Society. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
So let's begin with, who is E.F. Schumacher?
Schumacher was a British economist and author of the book Small is Beautiful. He began more or less as a traditional economist, but was asked to visit Burma. Before he left, he did a study of gross national product of Burma, of average yearly income, and expected, as a result of that investigation, to find some of the most unhappy people that he could imagine. Mm-hmm. Instead, he found a thriving people doing much production for their own necessities and production mm-hmm. that never entered the statistics. And it made him have to rethink his whole economic approach. Out of that came his now famous essay called Buddhist Economics, mm-hmm. in which he argued that the most sustainable economic system is one in which the goods and services consumed locally are in large degree produced locally.
Mm-hmm. Right. Would he advocate for a sort of closed local economy then?
Not at all, actually.
Yeah.
He also said if everyone were for small, he'd be for large.
Uh-huh.
It was a question of balance, and he, writing in the 60s, was concerned about the dominance of the global economy and the implications of that for regional economies. Mm-hmm. So he needed to put his emphasis on renewing the regional economies, much like Canada's own Jane Jacobs, and a great, great economic thinker, even though she was identified more for her planning strength. Mm-hmm. She really brought her great intellect to the issue of economies and also was a wonderful, articulate arguer for the importance of regional economies, diverse, articulated regional economies.
Mm-hmm. And what was it about Burma then? What are some things that he would have seen that really struck him?
Well, as in many traditional cultures, he found people eating with local foods. Mm-hmm. He found people building with local products. And often those activities didn't enter into national statistics because they weren't products that were exported. When you have an economy that looks to its own human resources, natural resources, financial resources to strengthen that economy, then you get this diversity and the sustainability and a more regional scale than in our now dominant global economy.
Would these be things that are sold, or are they things that are just grown and used without even the process of sale?
Often, yes.
Okay. Is that why they don't show up, or are things that are locally bought and sold, do they not show up in the statistics either?
Often, if it's a cash economy.
Okay.
I mean, all of the statisticians try to find those out, but it's Gandhi, his economist, J.C. Kumaraba, it's folks like Rabindranath Tagore who talk about the power of village economies.
Mm-hmm.
And often those exchanges that even just occur within villages or outside national tracking systems.
Mm-hmm. Would there be records taken of the transactions? If it's cash transactions, then people may not be taking record of it. Just sort of the
That's
record
true.
Is their total, right?
That's true.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, well, that's true. I mean, I think we all see it, how our current economy seems to go against that, not just not that philosophy, but actually against it, because, I mean, you can go to the local supermarkets and you'll see things that are available locally are not available in the stores. Instead, you got the same product. I'm thinking of when I went to the store recently to get some apples, and I can get apples from New Zealand, but I couldn't get apples from here. It's funny how that happens. It's weird.
Well, as a wise citizen, that year then becomes your responsibility to make known your preference
yes.
to the managers of that supermarket and to go out of your way to find alternatives. Here we are in the Berkshire region of Massachusetts, where the Schumacher Society's library and offices are located. And it was down the street from us that Robin Van Ant started the first community-supported farm, so the first CSA farm in this country at mm-hmm. Indian Line Farm. And recalling now in 1986 when the concept was introduced, the objections were, the difficulties were, that people would say, oh, it's rather inconvenient. I'd like to be able to get my vegetables whenever I want them, not just on the Thursday distribution day. And they would say, but, you know, I don't really like turnips. And so if the distribution includes turnips, I don't really prefer turnips.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to be able to choose whatever I want from the supermarket at any time of day or night. But now what's happened is with the growth of the CSA movement, citizens participating in CSAs begin to realize that they know the story of the products mm-hmm. that they're eating. They become familiar with the seasons, the cycles, the availability. They become aware of the problems, both just simple problems of how to get the weeding done that farmers face, or the weather problems that the farmers face.
Mm-hmm.
So they become more engaged in the actual concerns of food production, more aware of it, and so can be better advocates of a more sustainable food system. The whole movement had to overcome that first resistance because of inconvenience.
Mm-hmm.
it mm-hmm. will be inconvenient to shape new sustainable economies, but in the long run will strengthen our communities more, provide stronger social institutions, environmental institutions that build strong communities.
Mm-hmm. Now, the acronym CSA, I'm guessing that's Community Supported Agriculture. Would I be right?
Correct, Ryan. Sorry, I didn't spell that out.
Are you saying this was the first of that type?
Correct.
Yes.
The first CSA, Community Supported Agriculture, farm in this country started 2 miles down the street from the Schumacher Library mm-hmm. at Indian Line Farm. And the farmer who began this effort was named Robin Van Enn, and mm-hmm. she drew together a group of local people that came up with the model that is now spread to over 2,000 farms in North America.
Mm-hmm. Yes, no, I've heard of it before for sure. I think there's quite a few in this area too.
I'm sure. What it is it actually links consumers directly with producers. So you have consumers pre-buying their share of the farm product, mm-hmm. and that gives the farmer the capital to run the operation through the spring, through the planting, and guarantees the customer base. So the farmer is essentially hired by the community to actually go through the production. And the farmer doesn't have to be the marketer nor the risk taker. It's the community of consumers sharing the risk with the farmers. If the tomato crop that year fails because of extraordinary weather conditions, then mm-hmm. the CSA members won't have tomatoes. If there's an abundant beet crop, then the shareholders will have many, many beets mm-hmm. in their packages. Mm-hmm. And what you find is at the distribution day, you'll have people sharing recipes, this informal conversation, this informal building of local culture and a sharing of mm-hmm. local knowledge.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to an interview with Susan Witt of the E.F. Schumacher Society on Sustainable Futures.
Fantastic.
Yeah, and I think we see our goal at the Schumacher Society is extending that consumer-producer partnership beyond just food to how can we create other local production? What are the tools needed? What are the tools for providing affordable access to land for local production? What are the tools for providing affordable access to capital for local production? And mm-hmm. that's part of why we've taken on local currencies such as Berkshires.
Yes. Let's go into Berkshires. When did that start? What was the history of that? How did that come about?
It began almost as soon as we moved here to the Berkshires, and
which is a region, geographical region, right?
Pardon?
The Berkshires is a geographical region?
Correct.
Yes.
The Berkshires are the far western county of Massachusetts. So mm-hmm. we border New York State and Connecticut. Mm-hmm. It's a region that tends to have a history of independence. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have the demographics that draw state and federal funding for programs. So more tax dollars go out of the region than come into the region. Mm-hmm. So it's a region that has learned to be self-sufficient. It also has a rich intellectual history. Du Bois, W.E.B. Du Bois, the great civil rights thinker, was born in Great Barrington. Herman Melville wrote Moby Dick while living in the Berkshires. Plus a great artistic tradition. The Boston Symphony Orchestra summers at its Tanglewood campus in the Berkshires. Great theater, great dance, all takes place here. Many independent schools have their homes in the Berkshires. So this rich cultural tradition, as well as people with multiple skills and used to building their homes off the land, heating their homes with the cordwood from the forest, growing their own food. So that is part of our history here. But when we moved here in 1980, we were concerned about actually finding ways to encourage more small, independent businesses, ones making objects that were beginning to be imported into the region. So we began with a very small micro-loan program called SHARE, Self-Help Association for Regional Economy, to gain skills in making productive loans, so loans to farmers to pull them through the winter months in their greenhouse, loans to a dairy goat herdswoman to do a state-approved milking room so she could sell her goat cheese through restaurants and stores rather than just out her back door. So we made 25 loans, all very successful to start up businesses, and publicized these loans, making the point that it was local people lending funds to local businesses, pooling their funds to other local businesses. So our slogan was, "Do you know what your money is doing tonight?" Our share investors did. They knew it was in Susaloo's goat cheese business and Bonnie Nordoff's knitting machine. I mean, it's very, very tangible and visible.
That's a really interesting stretch in thinking to bring the idea of loans being local. I like it, yeah.
It's what it's going to take because our global monetary system actually favors the big borrowers. It's easier to make a $5 million loan than a $500,000 loan. And we found most of these small startups need $5,000. So how do you create the scale of financial vehicle to support sustainable local economies? The scale of the investment must also complement the regional scale of the businesses you're looking to support. The SHARE was very, very simple to operate. Someone actually called it the shoebox approach to banking, because all we had was a post office box and a file drawer. What people would do is open a savings account at a participating local bank, and that account was written as a joint account with SHARE. And then SHARE had the right to use those accounts to collateralize loans that the bank wouldn't normally make. So SHARE did not own the funds, but it had the right, through pre-signed agreements, to put them up as collateral. It was actually quite simple. I mean, when young people go to start up a business, they often turn to relatives, like to mm-hmm. a grandmother, and say, you know, Nan, I want to start this new business. Could mm-hmm. you lend me the money?
Yeah.
And grandmother will say, well, dear, I'm loath to take the money out of the bank, but let's talk to the nice banker. And the banker will say, of course we'll make the loan if grandmother will put up her passbook or CD as collateral for the loan. Correct?
Mm-hmm.
All we did was extend the pool of grandmothers to the whole community.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty fun. And a program that could work out of a church basement or a civic club very easily, because
yeah.
the bank actually was doing all the paperwork.
Mm-hmm.
We were just taking on the risk.
Mm-hmm.
But then what happened is the local business that was an existing business came to share for a loan. And this was Frank Tortorielli of the Deli, a popular spot in town. The carpentry crews would be there every morning for their breakfast before going to their jobs. The students at the local college would have lunch at the deli. The second homeowners up for the weekend found that the sandwiches were like the New York deli sandwiches they were used to.
Mm-hmm.
So a popular hangout. But Frank needed to move from one location to another.
Uh-oh. Yeah.
Needed the money to renovate the new location.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone knew Frank was always there and hardworking. But he also had a son with cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And much of the money from the business went to dealing with the health issues. And he probably wasn't the best keeper of records. So Frank's financial situation didn't compute in the bank's credit checking program, but did compute with local citizens.
Mm-hmm.
So Frank came and said, would Cher make a loan to me? And we said, you don't need our extended pool of grandmothers. You have your own and your customers borrow from them. Frank said, how do I do that? And we said, issue your own scrip. Issue your own currency.
Okay. Yeah.
So essentially, it was a pre-sale.
Mm-hmm.
Frank issued deli dollars.
Mm-hmm.
We suggested that he sell a $10 deli dollar for $10. Frank said, that's too good a deal for me. I'll sell them for $8. So an $8 deli dollar could be redeemed in the future for $10 of ham and cheese sandwiches, right?
Mm.
That was a good deal for his customers, but also a sound investment for Frank, because he wasn't repaying in federal dollars. He was repaying with product. But the deli dollars were dated, so they wouldn't all come in the first month of operation at the new spot. They had valid after dates. So when someone came in and put down 80 federal dollars to buy a set of 10 deli dollars, they would come due March, April, May, June. Do you
mm-hmm.
understand?
Mm-hmm. And they couldn't use it until then?
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
And Frank raised $5,000 in 30 days. but it was more than a $5,000 loan because everyone coming in to purchase Delhi Dollars were voting for Frank to be there.
And I see how this is a beneficial too, because since they can't spend it, this is sort of capital he has that's going to be there.
Exactly.
Right. Okay.
It was federal dollars that he used to renovate the new location.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's paying it back in sandwiches over time. Right?
But yes, it's a great idea.
Yeah, we thought it would go out and come back, but it didn't. The Delhi dollars began circulating.
Mm-hmm.
They showed up in the collection plate at the First Congregational Church.
Yes.
Because everyone knew that Pastor Van had lunch at the deli.
Oh, yeah, so he would use them, yeah. Okay.
The owner of White Knight Records, he had breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So he would take deli dollars for payment of CDs and tapes and records.
Yeah.
So it caused quite a stir. Following Delhi dollars were Berkshire Farm Preserve Notes, where two farms got together and pre-sold in the fall to give them the money to see them through the winter.
Mm-hmm.
And then the farm notes could be redeemed for summer and next fall's crops, and people were thus supporting the farm through the winter. So on the farm notes, instead of a head of George Washington, there was a head of cabbage. And instead of In God We Trust, it was In Farms
Yes.
We Trust.
Nice.
And instead of a Federal Reserve note, it was the Berkshire Farm Preserve note.
So what do you think so far?
I think that it's a really interesting concept, actually. A little bit skeptical about how it would work in a larger society, especially in the 21st century. But I think on a small scale, it's a really unique idea. And if it works for those people, that's great. It's one of those alternatives that different people can look into to help them solve some of their local economic situations.
Yeah. And you're going to see also, as the interview goes on, all of the stories that are generated from having a local currency, it had quite a phenomenal effect on their community.
That's awesome. I think that it would. I could see it bringing people closer together within a community. So not only building economics, but then also building the social capital of a community and building those relationships, which is really key as well for a sustainable society. So I think that it would do wonders for that.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be great if we could do that in something like Vancouver.
Yeah, it'd be a bit more difficult because
it would. Yeah, it would never happen
because there's such a multitude of shops and their chains and things, chain stores.
But I think it's, like I said, it's unique for a small town that bands together and that uses this as an alternative to more capitalist ways.
And maybe there's some genius thinkers in our audience, which I think there are. Who may find a way to make something like this work in a big metropolitan like Vancouver.
Sure. If I could trade a loaf of bread for a pair of shoes, all right, I'll do it.
You mean a pair of loafers?
Yeah. Well done, well done, yes.
Okay, so you're going to hear some more from Susan Witt about the Berkshires. So what are these minted from? How are you able to do that?
Well, Delhi dollars and Berkshire Farm Preserve Notes were just coupons.
Coupons, yep.
They're, so the local printer just printed them up, but each one was signed by the store owner before they went out.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't a real local currency. That
right.
was still a dream.
Yeah.
So it was a meeting of a Chamber of Commerce and local banks and the Schumacher Society staff that led to the inspiration of Berkshires.
Mm-hmm.
Berkshires, the bankers suggested, could start as a 10% discount note so that customers, local citizens, would go to a bank, put down 90 federal dollars, and get 100 Berkshires.
Mm-hmm.
That would circulate in the community at full value.
Mm-hmm.
But if merchants found they had more in the till than they could spend, because we still were importing much of our goods and services to the region,
mm-hmm.
then those Berkshires could go back to the bank, and 100 Berkshires could be exchanged back for 90 federal dollars.
Mm-hmm.
So Berkshires Inc. was founded, a nonprofit corporation locally based with membership open to anyone in the region. A board was appointed, and we began designing Berkshires. We wanted to honor local heroes, so the one unit note has the image of the Mohegan Indian,
uh-huh.
our first people in this region.
Mm-hmm.
The five unit note has W.E.B. Du Bois,
mm-hmm.
great civil rights leader, a social thinker primarily, founder of the NAACP. Robin Van End, the founder of Indian Line Farm, the first CSA farm in this country, is on the 10-unit note. Melville, Herman Melville, on the 20-unit note. And Norman Rockwell, the popularizer of small town America, is on the 50-unit note.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the back of each are paintings by local artists of river scenes and street scenes and garden scenes out of the Berkshires.
Mm-hmm.
Very fun and very beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
The designer, John Isaacs, is British by birth and had kind of the aesthetic of some of the European currencies. And we are lucky that in this region we have Crane Paper, which is the maker of the U.S. currency paper.
Mm-hmm.
They make other high security papers. So we purchased paper from Crane and then had Excelsior Printing, a division of Crane, actually print the currency under very secure conditions.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
We then contracted with 12 branches of 5 different banks and opened accounts in each branch and distributed all of the Berkshires to those banks. So the way it works, as I explained before, is citizens go into the bank with their federal dollars, which are then deposited into one of those Berkshires accounts, and they're given in its place Berkshires that circulate in the local community. But if merchants find they have too much, they can go back to any of these 12 banks and exchange their Berkshires back for federal dollars. So it's easily convertible.
Mm-hmm.
There are 300 businesses in our South County, a region of 15,000 people. 300 businesses that formally have signed up to take Berkshires. You can build a house in Berkshires. You can get a massage in Berkshires. You can do a legal contract in Berkshires. You can go to a doctor in Berkshires. You can have the landscaping done, a tree taken down.
Mm-hmm.
You can buy food and clothing, get your teeth fixed, arrange a funeral, all in Berkshire.
What is the outside perception of this? How are people reacting to a vibrant currency that is not federal? How do federal people feel about this?
We did all of our legal work. We have clearance from the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, and the U.S. Treasury.
Mm-hmm.
By clearance, I mean, they've said this is not our domain, essentially. As long as the currency doesn't look like federal dollars, and as long as there's an exchange rate with federal dollars so that transactions
right.
can be
is.
Taxed, yeah. then it's legal.
Mm-hmm.
Municipalities and states cannot issue currency, but private groups can. We're advocates of nonprofit, transparent, open corporations being the issuer. Rather than for-profit or individuals, because we feel the issue of currency should be a service, not a business, but a public service. Access to credit should be a public service, and the determination of the conditions for that access. Mm. So we launched September 2006. Since that time, 2 million Berkshires have gone out from the local banks, but they go out, come back. So at the moment, approximately 175,000 Berkshires are staying out in circulation.
Mm-hmm.
That changes every month, of course.
Wow.
It's good fun.
Yes.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
But they are cash, and I think going back to the example of the startup of community-supported agriculture,
mm-hmm.
there are many who find trade in Berkshires inconvenient. It's a face-to-face transaction again.
Mm-hmm.
You have to actually go into the printer and pay your bill in person. That means that you establish a relationship with
right.
that printer.
No debit, no credit cards, that kind of thing?
Right, but I think it's not just the credit aspect, but
yeah.
the face-to-face. You can't go online
mm-hmm.
with Berkshires. You have to walk into the bookstore.
Yep.
And that is to some inconvenient, but
mm-hmm.
it's also what it does is build local citizenship skills.
Yes.
You're aware of the conditions that your local businesses are facing. One wonderful story that we have is at the holiday season, Berkshires took out an ad in a local paper naming the 70 different nonprofits that would accept year-end donations in Berkshires. And we got a call from a local philanthropist who is known for supporting a diversity of local nonprofits. And she said, exactly how would I make a donation in Berkshires? And we said, you would walk or drive to the office of your favorite nonprofit. You would call the whole staff together. You would look each one of them in the eye. And you would say, you know, having your work in this community has made this community a better place. What you're doing is so important for all of us. And I'm here to thank you. And then you would hand them an envelope with a large stack of Berkshires. But that large stack of Berkshires would not be as important to them as that you came in person and acknowledged and thanked them. That would give them energy over the next 3 months at least,
yeah,
continue their good work. So local currency is a slow money,
mm-hmm,
a slow food movement.
Mm-hmm. Slow money, yeah. It goes right along with all the rest of the slow movement. Yeah.
Correct.
You're listening to an interview with Susan Witt of the E.F. Schumacher Society on Sustainable Futures.
I've been recently doing a lot of reading on the IMF. That, of course, that's never very happy reading, usually. I'm just thinking that this must be feel a little more secure, too, to have a currency that protects from sort of corruption that happens with the federal money. Would you say that having your own currency protects you from the insecurity or the sort of the blood that's on the money? You know, just what's that like? Is there a feeling of that?
There's local corruption that's possible also.
Yes, okay.
There's no insulation against that. But what there is when the scale of operations is more human scale, more regionally scaled.
Right. People you'll hear back from, people you know, people that you talk to.
Right. You get feedback much more quickly. And so, again, if it's an open process nonprofit that's doing the issue, then it's accountable back to the community and that adjustment can be made quicker. But what you're insulated from is from all of the insecurities of the ebb and flow of the global economy. We're so now dependent on transporting goods over long distances. I mean, think of it. In the 1800s in this country, every commercial bank issued its own currency. What did that mean? That meant that every region had available the amount of credit appropriate to that region.
Mm-hmm.
John Kenneth Galbraith, in his book, Money, Whence It Comes and Whither It Goeth, talks about some of the problems of those multiple regional currencies, but they were small in scale.
Mm-hmm.
And so the failure of one bank didn't affect the whole nation.
Right.
They were very localized, and so the solutions were local solutions and much more manageable. Now we've got failure of banking institutions in this country that because they're so big, the government feels they have to bail them out, which means the taxpayer is doing that or absorbing that cost in higher taxes and longer-term debt, correct? So
mm-hmm.
to have decentralized systems means that you can adjust better to problems in the system.
Mm-hmm.
You can recover more quickly from problems in the system. But what was the other strength of decentralized issue in the 1800s? It meant that every region had vibrant manufacturing appropriate for that region.
Mm-hmm.
So we developed a nation of producers, a nation of skilled workers, by turning now instead to the single global economy. We're losing those manufacturing skills and that manufacturing infrastructure. That perhaps is our biggest concern and our biggest loss of security as a nation.
Because it's not sustainable.
Well, if we lose the skills. Yeah. You know, if we skip a generation,
yes,
then
how do you learn
again? It's harder to jump back.
Mm-hmm.
So that remains my own biggest concern, for instance, here in the Berkshires, is to find ways to make sure that we're retraining and keeping up that skill set and that infrastructure set. We're here in the Berkshires in a hardwood forest. We have no furniture manufacturers. We're importing our furniture from fast-growing wood in Southeast Asia.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's a sad tale. We should, as citizens, be creating the conditions to secure a local manufacturing of furniture. That might be making sure that our institutions commit to buying locally of a furniture manufacturer in the future,
mm-hmm.
like creating markets. But we can do that. If we're motivated, we can do that. I'm not one for blaming IMF, blaming governments. I'm one for finding out how we as citizens can take responsibility,
yes,
of creating our own economic future.
Well, that's good for our program because we're not about, we're about solutions.
Terrific, Ryan.
Yeah. Okay. Is there anything else you would like to talk about before we say goodbye?
Actually, yes. I'd like to talk about something that just happened to the Schumacher Society recently.
Okay.
That highlights many of the issues we just were describing. The Schumacher Society for the past 4 years has been renting a home for staff and interns because housing prices are so high in the region.
Mm-hmm.
And that in order to secure affordability for our extraordinary young and capable staff and interns, it's necessary to provide housing as well. And this summer, we took a huge leap to sign a contract to purchase the home that the owner is being very generous in donating a third of its value. But it still had a lot of problems to deal with. And I was worried a week after the signing how we were going to take on the renovation.
Mm-hmm.
When I got a call from an owner of a small manufacturing firm in the region, it's a firm of 40 employees. It's called Protective Armored Services. And they make bulletproof glass for Humvees, for the U.S. Constitution is behind their glass. The Statue of Liberty has their glass. It's for homes and cars. But it's small manufacturing. The owner and inventor works right with his 40-person staff. He's got deep roots in the area. They had had an explosion of one of the pieces of an equipment, an autoclave, and the production would be shut down for at least 4 weeks. Now, one of their investors is an equity fund called Main Street Resources that invests only in businesses within a driving distance of the managers of the fund. They mm-hmm. want face-to-face contact with the businesses they're investing in.
Mm-hmm.
So their philosophy, unlike other equity funds, is not to look only at the bottom line of the numbers and try to grow the business big and then sell it off. They're looking at the quality of the management.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll take a minority interest and work one-on-one with the company to build it but build it for the community, not build it to sell off.
Right.
So that...
They could sure use that around here.
Well, that scale of money, again, we're talking about different financial tools that are going to support a sustainable economic future for our regions.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of philosophy as an investment fund is what is needed to work with the medium-sized businesses that are part of regional economies, correct?
Mm-hmm.
But it meant something else. It meant owners who are involved in the community. So when the plant was going to be shut down, they gave a call and said, look, we don't want to put our guys out of work. We don't want to put them on the dole. We want to keep them employed, but we'd like them to be employed doing community service. Do you have a project for them? So for 17 days, we watched 12 employees from Protective Armored Services mm-hmm. coming and working to transform our house. From a house with
That's
problems
yes.
to a warm, insulated, secure home with a new deck rather than rotting deck, with tiled bathrooms rather than carpeted floors, with brush cut to open the site to sunlight and air rather than a closed-in feeling. Absolutely transformed the home for us, for our staff. We provided home-baked muffins in the morning, great hot lunch, and lots of oohs and ahs at watching this transformation.
Yes.
And they provided good-spirited work towards renewing that building.
Mm-hmm.
That can only be done at a local scale
mm-hmm.
with the type of businesses deeply rooted in a community and accountable to community. Wasn't that great?
Yes.
We're just thrilled. We're just absolutely thrilled and kind of amazed. And it just proved again all the principles we were working on.
Well, it seems that this whole system is also generating a lot of great stories. It seems that the stories are endless because through the local community aspect of it all.
Yeah. You're right. We become storytellers.
Yeah.
Because what is happening is through these local economic systems, you're again linking people, land, and community. So mm-hmm. it's not just an economic story, and that's kind of proof of the pudding of these
mm-hmm.
Local economic tools, that they're going to impact many different areas culturally, ecologically, socially, as well as economically.
Okay, well, thank you very much. I really, really enjoyed talking about this.
Good talking with you, Ryan. You'll find the Schumacher Society at smallisbeautiful.org.
What a great example of how interconnected all of these issues are, Ryan. I mean, as she said at the very end, and she repeated it a couple of times, you're linking people with land, with economy. Those right there are the three pillars of sustainability, so...
It brings the idea of currency back to its original concept. I think the biggest part of this story, the thing that stands out is, if you look at it in what our currency is, it often works as a distancing tool. If you think back to barter, you know what service you're giving for what service. But when you use money, it becomes so abstract. And when it's a debit card, it's even more abstract. If it's a credit card, it's even more abstract. And you just forget that this is service for service, that this has been earned somehow for some, and you're giving it to someone to get something back. With the Burke shares, you know where it comes from. You know what the actual transaction is. And it's there in front of you.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. It you gain an appreciation for it. There's more of that appreciation for your own work and then for the work of others as well. And we lack that in our society. We lack that appreciation.
Well, I'm Ryan Fletcher.
And I'm Kim Tay.
And we are wishing you
a sustainable future.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. You can also find us online at www.cjsf.ca, or you can call us at 778-782-CJSF.